And our presenters today are Dan Cantlin and Jalon Arthur. And Dan is with Cure Violence, and Jalon is with, he leads Cure Violence Illinois, so I think focused specifically on the state of Illinois. Dan is the Director of Research and Evaluation at Cure Violence, and he is responsible for developing the research protocols that are used to track the implementation and outcomes of these campaigns. So I'll turn it over to Dan and Jalon to talk about their presentation and build on the one we just heard.
All right. Thank you. These first set of slides, I'm just going to quickly go into it since there's not too much time. Josie gave you some good background. Gave you some good background on Cure Violence, so I'm just going to hit a little bit here and there. As she said, it's small neighborhoods. We have small staffing numbers as well, 3 to 4 outreach workers, 3 to 4 violence interrupters, a program manager and supervisor. We try to fit ourselves within existing community-based organizations. One of those is Enlace, and that's in Little Village, our Latino community. And so we do this for sustainability purposes, and we try to partner with an organization that has a good history in the neighborhood. And they also receive a lot of training and technical assistance and then have a dedicated TA throughout because it is a complex intervention. Josie also mentioned this, we're a health and epidemic control model with these three components. She discussed them briefly, so I'm just going to go on there when we talk about it more. Okay, and then a couple slides here. This is West Englewood. I wanted to align with Josie's. We're the three beats in the corner there. One of the difficulties is Englewood's a very high crime neighborhood, as you can see. It's had 208 shootings, 60 killings. But it's hard to contain it when it's all around you. I think Josie described it well. We could be in all 15 of those beats, but then we'd probably be nowhere else in the city. So that's how we're in kind of pockets here and there. And then this gives you an example, too, of we do group-level work. So this shows at the bottom you've got the U.S. homicide rate, New York City's homicide rate, which is at or below the average. Then you have Chicago's and then 11th District. So when we bring high-risk clients together and just neighborhood residents, we start out with this slide, kind of like we have this poster. Here's your neighborhood. The whole idea is to focus on norms and how it's, this is not normal. So public education. Actually, Josie ended with that bumper sticker. People saw, "Don't shoot, I want to grow up." Our pub ed materials have been in the neighborhoods and in the city for over a decade. So we just needed some new public education materials as part of the reason for the new campaign. But we wanted to make it really targeted. And the realities of community violence. It's often in groups and it's often in public. And we also, we feel we do good one-to-one work through our outreach workers and conflict mediation, but we wanted to step it up and emphasize kind of more group level and community level dynamics. Because we're not with our clients 100% of the time. They go back to the block, back to their gang, group, clique, whatever. And so we needed to start targeting kind of that ecological system. And that's all this shows, right, that the campaign's focusing on the highest risk and changing group and community norms, and not even so much community as the high-risk group. So it's kind of, we want to reinforce our one-to-one work and then our group-level work especially. The campaign itself, Jalen's going to talk about that. You have influence, use it, stopping a friend from using violence. But here I just wanted to highlight when we talk about high risk, this is what we mean by high risk. And Josie touched upon this. High school diploma or GED, maybe close to 25%. Unemployed, close to 80% for both Chicago and Illinois. Almost everyone's gang involved. And then you have the majority have a key role in the gang. And that's part of our model. We target people who have the key roles and then try to change their mind so that they can influence others. High-risk street activity, close to 100%. So our high risk is not other people's high risk, generally speaking. They're really in risk, an extensive risk. Now, in terms of the evaluation, it's a mixed method. We're going to be doing surveys, focus groups, interviews. I'm going to mainly be talking about this survey process we did. the street intercept data collection. Goal was to collect data on awareness of our current campaign. What do people already know? It's going to be hard to differentiate the new one given the extensive nature of our old one. And, of course, we saw it as an opportunity just to collect any and all data around kind of like community reporting. And then we had some norm questions with scenarios. I won't go into that today, but it puts these different scenarios of different street infractions, and then what would you do? Shoot, threaten, start a fight, say something, or leave it alone. This shows the three neighborhoods. Hermosa, that's on the west side. Latino neighborhood, Greater Grand Crossing is our control. And Roseland is another cure violence neighborhood. Both of the south side communities are African American. So just to give you an idea of where we're at and where the high crime is at. And so I showed you the Chicago stats because we're targeting like we're targeting our clients and people who look like our clients who are not. And so this is just to show we think we're doing a good job of getting data. They're around the same age. They're 80% male. So actually males are a little underrepresented compared to our normal client level. But about 70% have been arrested, on average at least three times, shot at twice, and then similar stats for the friend, actually a little more. And so for the neighborhoods, oversampled the control neighborhood and then Roseland as well. And this is probably one of the key indicators we're going to compare against in the future. And this is just, how often do friends help friends? And that's kind of like the target of our campaign, right? Sorry about that. Just want to make sure I give Jalen enough time. So as it ticks away as I'm getting it up. Okay. So thinking about the past 6 months, how many times have you helped a friend? And so we have avoid situation, stimulus control. We do this with our one-to-one work. We do this with our group level work. Resolve a conflict without using violence. Stay out of a physical fight, and to not use a gun. And as you can see, like around 55% already friends are helping friends two times or more in 6 months, all of these indicators, right? So it is true that violence is public. It's often, escalated by peers. But there's a lot of this going on, and we've already seen this because we mediate conflicts, and our best mediators got their training on the street. They were mediating them before they worked for us. And then how did your friend respond? From very upset to very appreciative. They're mostly on the positive side here. This will be interesting to look at. And, of course, you need qualitative data here that we're going to be getting what exactly this means. I'd assume a lot of times they're very upset, and then they become somewhat appreciative. And then this just shows you a general awareness. As I said, our pub ed is everywhere. So even in Greater Grand Crossing, they're reporting seeing a lot of pub ed in their community. And it may be outside their community, or there may be a lot of bumper stickers and things in their community, even though they're not a cure violence neighborhood. So it'll be interesting to assess as we go forward. But Roseland, 76% is far and away, has the most awareness, which is good because they're the most active cure violence neighborhood. All right, so now I'm going to turn it over to Jalen, 41 seconds late.
How's everybody doing?
Everybody good? For sure.
So I think the first thing I'll say is the
underlying program philosophy for cure violence is if you're serious about stopping the shootings or stopping shootings in any given community, you have to be able to work with the shooters within those communities. Very serious point there.
And so our target population, again, as Dan said, and this is our target population as far as our program, which mirrors the same population that we're working with for our pub ed campaign. And basically we're talking about the highest risk individuals, shooters, potential shooters, the mindset at the first time that we start interacting with these individuals in groups is they actually want to squeeze the trigger as a first response to violence, first response to conflict. It's not a last resort. So and then of course, highest risk groups, gangs, cliques, things of that nature. Where are we actually engaging with them with our pub ed messages and stuff? The streets, block by block, office, home visits. We're using social media sites. As Josie talked about earlier, an analogy I always like to use is keeping up with the streets is like keeping up with technology. You can become outdated in this field overnight. And so we're using social media the same way that a lot of our high-risk individuals are using it as well. People are using social media to instigate violence there's a growing number of incidents of individuals and groups that are actually being violently injured and even killed as a result of social media. So we're utilizing that to even put our messages out there as well. The one-on-one interactions, no substitute for that. A lot of our case management stuff, the way somebody acts in a group is a lot of times different from the way they'll act when you're interacting with them on a one-on-one. But there's no substitute for this group level work. The thing is, any area, any community, any country that we've worked in, where there's epidemic levels of violence, there's always these forums, these conferences, these different type of groups, town hall meetings, where they're trying to strategize on how to actually get the violence down. You have key stakeholders present there. A lot of times the missing element is the individuals and groups that are actually engaging in the violence are not actually represented there. And I think the reality is, if you don't have the buy-in from that population, you really have nothing. And so we actually use this group-level work as an opportunity to inform our strategy, to inform our practice, to inform our pub ed campaign, what type of messages are going to resonate, and also to be able to test innovations. We have this opportunity for this two-way dialogue, two-way exchange, not just us talking at them or talking to them. We're playing an active listening role as well, and able to inform and inform our practice and learn as well, so that we can strengthen and enhance our strategy. So we use these summits, focus groups, behavior change sessions. Again, highest risk individuals are there. Sometimes it's multiple groups, rival groups represented there. Sometimes it's only group A or group B that's there because of safety issues. Also, these different sessions that we have, there's a curriculum there, scripted. We have some. We discuss these top violent triggers, which is critical. We do different role plays, and then we have an opportunity to actually introduce some skill sets that are relevant. This is just a pie chart of some common triggers, common violent triggers, and justifications for violence. We talked about this earlier, but it's important again because a lot of times when we identify these things, we then identify different strategies, pub ed campaigns, and even messaging around the different violent triggers. So if it's social media, if it's stuff around substance or group tensions or petty conflicts, we can then begin to pull messages that actually make sense around those. And this is just to show you, we actually, what we're doing in Chicago right now, and for our Illinois sites, quarterly sessions. Each quarter we actually have a summit, a focus group, where we actually bring these high-risk individuals to the table. We're talking about different issues around violence. We're presenting different messages, and also our evaluation team has an opportunity to do surveys with that highest risk population at these different sessions. And so this particular campaign, You Have Influence, Use It. It's a critical piece because a lot of times there's a very big difference between actually having credibility, having influence, and then actually using it. And so this campaign is all about that. We're trying to promote new cultural, social norms, integrate that into our actual program. And so these are some of the examples of some of the stuff. So 30 years for $30, not worth it. Now, this actual message right here has a lot of meaning. It could have some meaning as far as robbery. You know what I mean? Robbery, a lot of times, you know, and in Chicago specifically, you actually get 6 to 30 years for a robbery. Robbery a lot of times turn into shootings, turn into homicides. And so in a lot of times when these robberies happen, you know, on the spot type of things, not planned, sticking up people on the corner or whatever the case may be, these individuals, you know, you might get $10, $15, $30 a lot of times. So this message has a lot of meaning there. And then there's some other messages that we have here too. You know, let the petty stuff, because a lot of violence is over petty issues. This thing takes up more time. Just calmate. And so the biggest thing, just kind of closing out, is, you know, we already did a 1-year baseline. We did some preliminary data that's already been collected that Dan shared. We just rolled out this campaign. So in about a year, you know, we're going to be having a follow-up survey, more interviews, focus group summits. We're going to be tracking the dissemination of these materials and then how it's actually being integrated into the program. And so, you know, this is just a quick example of some of the pub ed messaging that we have going on in Chicago right now. But keep in mind, all of our programs, you know, not just in Chicago, but across the nation and even in other countries, they have different pub ed campaigns as well. And that's 1 minute, so we have 1 minute for questions. All right.
Put your paper away. I'm sorry.
So the question is really about Wisdom, about the victimization piece of it as it relates to violence and preventing more acts of violence. And basically, and two things I'll say really quickly. One, we actually have a program in Brooklyn. We'll actually connect you with some of those people as well. You can collaborate with them. The second piece is that we've been really looking at the role that trauma plays a lot more with our program in recent years. And I think one of the things we have an opportunity to do, because we're talking about victims, both perpetrators and the victims themselves, all really victims. And so the thing is, even in a process of conflict mediations and stuff, a lot of times we have opportunities to bring both sides together. And so in the process of actually doing that, we are actually preventing further acts of violence. We're trying to incorporate the trauma piece in it, the mindfulness piece of it. So it's we're learning a lot right now, and we're trying to do more of that as we're going. And so I'm just kind of keeping that short. But yeah, we're doing some of that. But we can talk more after this session.
There was one more question, and then I'll.
That makes it easy. The second part of your question, let me repeat the questions real quick. So first, why was law enforcement not represented here? First question. Second question is, how do we get the people to actually come to the table? High-risk groups, I'm assuming you're talking about. Right. So answer your second question first, really quickly. We employ credible messengers. You cannot train the wrong workers to be the right workers for this type of work. So our guys come to the table with a lot of networks, relationships already, and then we actually build upon those relationships on a block-by-block basis. So these are individuals, they empathize with them, they know these guys, there's a lot of trust there. So it's not a big challenge getting these guys to come to the table. The second piece of it, we kind of focus on the pub ed piece, and we focused on kind of what the community looked like. That's not so much the overall model. That's the reason why the law enforcement role wasn't represented there. There's a role for law enforcement. They play a role. We play a role. Law enforcement trying to stop shootings from happening. I mean, law enforcement, once a shooting or a violent event happens, they're stepping in. They're doing what law enforcement does. We're actually trying to stop an event from ever occurring. And if an event was to occur, we're already going to that mode to prevent the retaliation. So they kind of go hand in hand.
So I'll step down.